Good evening and welcome back to Mask's weekly radio show on Family Matters. Mask, mothers and fathers aligned, saving kids of all ages and all stages for all mental health struggles, including addiction. If you know somebody that needs a referral for a therapist, psychiatrist, an inpatient or outpatient program, or a school for the new year, please give us a call at 718-758-0400. I'll repeat the number. Maybe it's for yourself, a loved one, a neighbor, or someone you usually would sit next to in shul. Remember, all calls are strictly confidential. A number again, 718-758-0400. In addition, if you know someone that wants to get a free naloxone kit for prevention of opioid overdose, have them call us. We could train them by Zoom and or in person, and if need be, mail the kit to them. So please give our name and number to anyone that's struggling with addiction. Everyone should have a kit for an emergency, God forbid. So I'm really honored to have with us on tonight somebody that has been really, I've really been trying to get on for a long time now. And I'm so happy that he has the few minutes to spend with us. And that is Dr. Harris Straightener, who's a PhD, a licensed psychologist, and he's nationally recognized. I mean, he's been doing this for decades, and he's really in the leadership of the industry. He's dedicated to advancing the public's understanding to the ever-evolving mental health issues. Dr. Straightener has a model that's called Carefrontation, which I will have him speak about. And he specializes in strength-based approach to mental health and addiction issues. I'd like to welcome you on, Dr. Straightener. Thank you so much for making the time tonight.
It's a pleasure to be with you, Rahmana, and a pleasure. I want to thank MASCS for having me. Such a wonderful organization, and the work that you've done over the years is it's a mitzvah.
Thank you. So Dr. Straightener, you have a practice with your daughter who we've had on in the past. I would like you to speak about your practice. It is a very active practice, years and years and years. And I know the media is always reaching out to you. So I'd like you to talk to me about what it is your practice specializes in first, please.
Of course. So I've been a doctor for over 40 years, and our practice called Straightener and Associates basically focuses on co-occurring disorders, psychiatric substance abuse, people who have had anxiety, panic disorder, bipolar disorder, schizoaffective disorder, schizophrenia, various illnesses, and just everyday people who self-medicate, who might get addicted to medication they were prescribed. We're seeing so much of that in today's world, and we're hearing so much about opioid addiction and how deleterious it is to one's physical and mental health and well-being. And we're seeing in more recent years, we're seeing a real trend towards youngsters looking to get a high, looking to try to feel like they belong in this world of ours. And unfortunately, it's a very dangerous road to go down. I started back in the early or late 70s, early 80s, and I noticed that there were people who were alcoholic and drug addicted, but that they also had psychiatric issues because I was the assistant director of community services back then, my first job as a young guy at Rockland Psychiatric Center, probably one of the most famous psychiatric hospitals in New York State. And I started the first, back then we called it a MICA, Mentally Ill Chemical Abuse Program. And I started the first one, perhaps in the United States, certainly in New York State. And we started to focus on how do you reach out to people whose illness makes them distrustful at times. They feel like they don't want to take medication, like they include you in their paranoid thoughts. And here you're trying to get them to do something to help themselves, because instead they would smoke marijuana, they would drink, they would do cocaine, they would take opioids. And we didn't want that to exacerbate their symptoms, to make them sicker and sicker. And as you know, Rahama, addiction is a family, who knows better than you? It's a family disease. It's primary, progressive, chronic, and if it's not treated, it's fatal. And we need people to really understand addiction is not a moral failing. It's not something to be ashamed of. It's a disease. And the word disease is a fascinating word because it's made up of two parts. So it's really dis-ease. People with the disease of addiction have a dis-ease with life. And that's what we say under the model of carefrontation. Don't shame or blame anybody. Treat everybody with respect and dignity, but hold them responsible like you would with any disease, like diabetes, for getting treatment, getting proper treatment. If somebody's diabetic, they have to watch their diet. They have to perhaps take insulin or other medications. And it's the same thing with addiction. If somebody has addiction, they may need a medication. They may need to go to 12-step programs. They may need to be, as you mentioned at the top of the evening, they may need to go to a program, intensive outpatient program, etc. So that's what our focus has been.
And doctor, your goal is to give each patient the tools they need to create a positive patterns, habits for their life. You bring up MICA, mentally ill and chemically addicted. The drugs today are laced with fentanyl.
Yes.
Can you please explain to my listeners if somebody has the gene of bipolar, mental illness, depression, anxiety, whatever that may be, and they are taking marijuana, which is unfortunately available everywhere today, what it can do and how it could send them into a spiral, mentally without them even realizing that that may happen?
You know, it's so interesting and so important that we note, even though there's a big trend in this country, and it's the time has passed for us to be pulled back. I'm not a fan of marijuana. I think it's a very tricky drug. I think it tends to make kids lazy. I think it affects their thinking. I think it makes particularly young minds that are still developing. Now we know through research that the mind, the brain, develops through the age of 30. And when it's inundated with a drug like marijuana, although marijuana has its uses for people, let's say with cancer, to create an appetite and things. I'm not throwing the baby out with the bathwater, but it's not for kids. And the irony is that it's become such an abused drug by youngsters. And when we see these children, 13. I've had, but the youngest patient I ever had who was smoking marijuana was 9 years old. 9 years old. And here they have a genetic predisposition to depression. And, you know, you've got to be cognizant of the fact that you're adding in other substances that are going to further depress you, that are going to make you lazy, that are going to make you not think clearly. You know, it's ironic. We know that when you drive and you, when you drink and you drive, you could run a red light, you could speed. When you smoke marijuana and drive, oftentimes people are caught stopped at red lights, and they don't, and the light turns green and they don't move. They just sit in the car. It's a real danger. I'm sorry that they are trending towards legalizing marijuana, although perhaps, you know, on some level, the legalization of these drugs is not the big issue. Perhaps the issue is educating people to understand that they need to be careful what they put in their bodies, and that they should experience life first in a sober manner, in a way that's joyful. You know, a day like today, it's beautiful, it's cool out, it's, the sun is out in the tri-state area, and the air smells fresh and clean. We're coming up upon the, for example, the Jewish holidays, the New Year. What a wonderful celebration. Why do people have to put drugs in their body? And then you look at something like fentanyl, which is an extremely dangerous, dangerous drug. And some of the drugs that kids are taking are being laced with fentanyl. The kids don't know it. They take it, and quite frankly, they die.
And yeah, we do have, sadly, so many young adults dying with no intention to die. They're taking it, and just it's a shock to family. So it's so important that we educate, conversations about the dangers of the drugs and mixing it. There are many kids that are on ADHD medications and other meds.
Exactly.
Please bring that conversation to the table.
Yeah. You know, I did an article. I was interviewed by the New York Times, and I also did a radio interview on National Public Radio with Leonard Lopate on that very topic, people with ADHD, and the fact that it's real. Attention deficit disorder and hyperactivity disorder. And you see little kids who get it and they need to go on medication. You try not to push people to go on medication, but if they need it, they need it. Just like, again, any other illness. We've got to think of addiction as a disorder. It's an illness. So they go on these medications and then they start, let's say the kids hanging out with their friends, and they decide they're going to smoke a little marijuana or they're going to drink a little alcohol. Alcohol, by the way, is the most dangerous drug there is. Yes, it's legal. It's been around forever. But alcohol is a central nervous system depressant. You add alcohol in, and if, God forbid, you're taking anxiety medication, the two can come together and cause what we use a fancy term. Doctors like to use fancy words. Synergistic effect, a combined effect that joins together and the person overdoses. Their breathing becomes shallow. Their heart rate slows. And before you know it, you have somebody who's moving towards coma. And that's when 911 gets called. And that's when, if I heard at the top of this evening's program, you mentioned naloxone. If you have a naloxone kit, you might be able to save someone. That's so important. The work you guys do is just amazing. But that's what goes on. And the big thing we need to do is educate people. You know, there used to be a clothing store, Sims, and their line on Sims was, the educated consumer is our best customer. And the reality is, the educated consumer is the person who's going to keep kids alive, because they're going to educate them. They're going to teach them the realities. They're going to have them overcome their denial. Because when you're young, you think you're going to live forever. You think that you're immortal. But the problem is, you're not immortal. Life is a fragile gift, and we need to protect it.
Absolutely. Let's speak about the world at large. COVID has taken so many families into isolation and loneliness, and navigating the grief that they've been through, and loss. How are you able to help those families when it comes to treating them when they're experiencing, different disorders and getting addicted? What do you want to speak about your practice in reference to somebody wants to call you? How do you like seeing those clients?
Sure. So, I always refer to the people I see, being a doctor, as patients, because I like to say, lawyers treat clients, doctors treat patients. Because again, I like to really reinforce that addiction and mental illness are diseases, they're disease entities. That's so important that people realize that. I remember a couple of years back, I was doing an interview on NBC with Chuck Scarborough, who I think has since retired. And we were talking about that very point, that there's no shame. There's no shame in having an illness. Most of these things have genetic predispositions. And at the same time, if somebody genetically is handing off an illness to you, they're also being affected by the illness. So not only are you getting what we call nature that's handing you a stone around your neck, but you're also getting somebody who may be raising you who has a stone around their neck. So when I work with families, I try to engage them. The most important thing that you can do as a therapist, as a psychologist, as a doctor, is to make sure you develop a therapeutic alliance. It's a term that goes back to Frieda Fromm Reichman, great psychoanalyst, many, many decades ago. And it was discovered that the relationship between the therapist and the patient is the most important variable in helping people. Because if a youngster or an adult understands that they can trust their doctor. Think about a general doctor. Think about when you go to see your internist. And let's say you're going there for a cold, or you're scared you got COVID. You've got to trust that person before you're going to allow them to suggest that you get a vaccination, to suggest that you take certain medications. Trust is so important. Erickson, the great psychologist, many, many, many years ago, had eight psychosocial stages. And the first stage of his eight psychosocial stage change theory was basic trust versus mistrust. And if you don't develop trust, you don't develop hope. So, in order for us to have hope, we must have trust. So doctors have to have a very good bedside manner, if you will.
That's for sure. Doctor, there are families that call every day. How do we get our loved ones to take medication, whether they're bipolar, whether they have a mood regulation concern, whatever it is,
Right.
and they're over 18 and they refuse meds? What do you say to those parents?
So again, you've got to have a relationship. And sometimes you have to go to a professional. When I try to engage somebody, let's say somebody comes to my office and they say to me, Dr. Straightner, my son, he's not in his right state of mind. He's hearing voices. First thing I do is I, as a doctor, is I do some neuropsychological testing and I assess what is really going on so that I know what I'm dealing with. So let's say that I come up with a diagnosis. And diagnoses are just words that doctors use. Think of it as a cookbook. You got to know what ingredients go into making a cake. You also have to know what are the symptoms of a particular disease entity. So the first thing I want to do is know what I'm dealing with. Then I gently, not in a confrontative manner, but in a gentle, carefrontational manner, I engage that person. I engage their family, because again, we'll harken back to something I said earlier, which is that addiction is a family disease, so is mental illness. And I get them to trust. There's that wonderful word of trust. And once they start to trust you, very slowly, it's a gradual process, I will get someone to trust. And then if they need medication, then we talk to them about the benefits. And also, in all candor, there are symptoms, side effects of medications. We talk about that also. Again, coming back to the educated consumer is our best customer. So we educate.
I know, Doctor, you also help young people that have addiction issues. You go the extra mile once they're sober, help them navigate their career choices, even.
Absolutely. It's so important that people with psychiatric and/or substance abuse issues understand that that doesn't have to be the dominating factor in their life. They don't have to be stigmatized. And there's a tendency in society to stigmatize people who have addiction or have mental health issues. And what I do is I literally will link people up. I'll connect people. It's very similar to Alcoholics Anonymous, if you will. They take somebody who has alcoholism. They have formed an organization with 12 steps and 12 traditions, and they're wonderful, and they bring them through these steps. And that's how I work. I go through the different stages of change. How do you get somebody to accept? We call that pre-contemplation, where people are in denial. We move them to contemplation where they accept that they have an illness. Then we move them to preparation. Preparation is a stage where you get ready to make a change. Then we move them to action. Action is the stage for at least 6 months you've made a change. Then we get that behavior to be maintained, and then we prevent relapse. Because relapse oftentimes doesn't have to be, but oftentimes can be part of a disease entity, be it not taking their medication all of a sudden. And part of the disease, let's say we take somebody who has bipolar disorder, then we have to say they may want to feel that grandiosity. They may want to feel that hypo or hypomania or mania. And that's something we have to look at. And we get to help them to stay with what we're saying, based upon trust.
Giving them the confidence and the strength to be able to better cope with stress, and they're able to then find a life to be able to have better choices, better life, and families. You really offer strategies to the family members where they could help those people that are struggling. Wow,
Absolutely.
so much more we could be speaking about. Doctor, I do want to bring up something before we get off our time, and that is
Sure.
the world at large, anti-Semitism, and what it's doing with young adults, the stress of so many people. Being around, whether it's in college, whether it's in the neighborhoods, and how have you been hearing about these family members? I know you deal with many of them. So I'd like you just to speak about that, please.
Absolutely. You know, I have never in my life seen the level of anti-Semitism that I'm seeing today. I'm not going to get into politics, but I am going
No.
to say, that it's unbelievable. I mean, what we're seeing, I was just speaking to somebody with the Anti-Defamation League, and it's amazing that we're seeing anti-Semitism rear its ugly head again. We're seeing shuls that are being blown up, thinking of the one in Pennsylvania. We're seeing kids that, the other people who don't understand what it means when they see somebody who's religious, they throw stones at them. What we have to do again, it's a parallel to what we were just talking about with addiction and mental illness. We have to educate. We have to educate people to understand that God, and however you define God, that you must see that God created people to be equal and that we can all have different beliefs. That's the plurality that makes the United States of America, that makes democracy such a wonderful thing. Everybody can have a different opinion. It's a mosaic. But we can still accept and, again, the word trust. Such a parallel between addiction and anti-Semitism.
Right, and I'm going to interrupt you by saying that the same goes for accepting people that do have mental illness. So we need to all be equal in accepting, so we work towards stigma free.
Exactly. That word stigma, I hate that word. That we would stigmatize people, that we would make people feel less than.
Well, Dr. Straightener, it's wonderful having you on, and I do hope we can have you on again soon and continue this most important conversation.
Would be my greatest pleasure. And again, God bless you for the work that you and your organization do.
Thank you, and I want to wish everyone a very good evening, a beautiful Shabbos, and always remember, hang in, hold on, and for now, still virtually, hug tight. Tonight's show is in memory of Rivka Bas Yisrael. Please consider to go online to maskparents.org so we could continue with all the mask programs and the radio show. Thank you and have a good night.